I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s,
she looked like a million bucks,
scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Pridecast with Jonathan Bennett
and James Vaughn
on iHeartRadio.
Hey, it's Jonathan Bennett, and this is iHeartRadio's Pridecast, your weekly dose of love, laughter, and hopefully a little bit of inspiration and a reminder to be proud of who you are. Welcome to Pridecast, everybody. I'm joined with my husband, who is in Virginia right now, James Vaughn. Hi, baby.
Oh, and Virginia,
I miss you.
Is Virginia-ing. Oh, baby, I miss you too.
You're Virginia-ing. You went home because mom got the vid. And mom, so James had to go home and visit vid mom.
So we're taking care of mama. We got her on the mend. Had to give my brothers a little bit of a break, and we're doing it. So I'm here, you're there, and
we're here. We're queer. Get used to it.
Oh, the queerest. But baby, I'm excited. All right. So maybe I'm not excited for me for this topic, but I'm excited for you for this topic. Be honest. When you're married to somebody, you know their excitement means the most to you, right? So today we have on the show Nina West, who's starring in Hairspray on tour right now. And that allows us to talk about my husband's favorite topic in the entire world to start this show off. And that is
musicals. We're talking about musicals. It's the best episode ever. It's musicals.
My baby loves anything with a song, anything where they are explaining to you what is going on through music.
Okay, first of all, for the record, when I first met James, he wasn't a musical theater fan. He like tolerated them and sang them and like knew them, but he wasn't into them. So I really,
it was a test of love. I had to know them for auditions and stuff.
It was a test of love when I took him to see our first musical together. Babe, do you remember the first musical we saw together was?
Oh, wait. You took me to see Something Rotten, right?
Yes.
That's
Something
one. That was a,
Rotten.
That was a good one to pull me into the musical world on because it's funny. It's a comedy musical. And they
there's
make
a song
fun
called,
of the
it's
fact
a musical.
That it's a musical.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a song in it about making fun of musicals. So I thought you would like that. Also, it's one of the best shows ever written. Some of the best songs. Raymond's with us, our in-studio producer, our Gen Z leaning fabulous love bucket, Raymond. Raymond, are you a musical fan? Oh my god,
Raymond, I hear you.
Not
I feel you.
Is this a Gen Z thing? Is it because I'm old and
no,
Gen
don't,
Zers don't
I
like
don't,
musicals?
No, I think that like I'm like young enough where it's like you weren't closeted gay into theater. You could just do a bunch of other stuff.
You were like, wow. You're like, I didn't do musicals. I did TikTok.
No, I didn't even do TikTok. I mean, I was definitely like, I had a MySpace for like a second. You know what
I
mean?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
No, but that's what Raymond said right there. Like, that's such a good point. Like, theater was an outlet for us. Like, yes, baby, as much as I was not a musical gay, I did the musicals in high school because it was a space where you could go and be loud and be boisterous and be the most and perform and get to be as much of yourself as you could or felt safe to in that moment in time. So I think that does maybe speak to why the gays of a certain age love a musical so much, because it was a place where we could go like, did I really want to be in Guys and Dolls? Did I really want to be in Anything Goes? No, but did I
think
I want
to be in Guys
being loud?
More than Dolls? Hey! Hey, yo.
Take it there. Always got to go.
I mean, I'm just, here's we're talking line. About pride, okay? You're proud of it. It's fine. It's proud of it. But it is. Musical theater and high school theater was your safe place. It was the place you would walk into and you would be celebrated for being different. When everyone else would just, not to, no pun intended, but would rain on your parade. When everyone else would rain on your parade as you were going through your daily high school activities and tell you how awful you were or make you feel insecure, the musical theater room and like the auditorium was the place that you would be celebrated. You would literally stand on stage and people would clap for you because of your queerness and your weirdness. And so it's definitely where I fell in love with musical theater. I think I've been in probably like 32 musicals in my life, like through high school and through everything. Like it is my favorite thing in the world. It's actually funny because most people say like, what do you watch on Netflix? What do you watch on Amazon? And James will tell you, I don't. I only watch YouTube videos of musicals. And people think that's like I'm being funny, like that's a joke. No, it's true. Like if you look at my Netflix account, like I don't watch anything except Ozark with James or True Crime. Everything else, I'm watching YouTube musicals because it's just a place to escape. And there's so many, it just takes you to another world. You just get to sit there and like fall in love with these songs and these, ugh, I love it. I can talk musicals all day long.
I came into the bedroom a couple weeks ago and Jonathan is watching a video of all the girls from Wicked singing the high note just in a row.
It's called
in a row.
It's on the loop. Divine
it's like
Gravity
a 45 minute segment of just the same thing over
the same
and over.
Note.
Mm-hmm. And he's loving it. He's like all climbing all over the bed.
Jenny
like,
DeNoia, like Eden Espinoza, Jackie Burns. I'm forgetting a couple that I love, so don't hate me, but there's a lot of them that are my favorites. And it is one of my favorite things to do. Listen to people sing musicals. I could
Speaking
listen to,
of Wicked.
I could listen to Derek Klina or Aaron Tveit sing anything for days. That's all I do. All right,
baby, let's back to Wicked real quick. Because why don't you tell everybody how many times you have seen
I've seen
the
Wicked 29
Wicked.
Times.
29. I've seen
29
it
times.
Two
I've
of
seen
those
Wicked
times,
20,
with you, right?
Huh?
Two of those times I saw it with
yes.
you?
Yes. And I will sing every song to every lyric to every word. I know everything about every Jerry Mitchell show ever made in the history of life. I know every word to every song. I know all the choreography. I've memorized it. I know everything. I am like what Star Trek people are to like in Star Wars, like the fans that are like the Trekkies and like that. I'm that to musicals. Like I'm that weird of a nerd. Here's my story of the time I broke out in hives. When I met Eden Espinoza and Megan Hilty backstage at Wicked at the Pantages. Picture it. Hollywood. 2010. Whatever. Somewhere around there. I went with my friend Robbie to see Wicked. And I went with my friend Allie to see Wicked. And it was Eden Espinoza and Megan Hilty. And I got to go backstage and they're because I had a friend in the show and she was like, do you want to come backstage and meet everyone after the show? I said, of course. Well, I'm sitting there. Megan Hilty comes up to me and is like, oh, my gosh, I'm a huge fan. We watch Mean Girls every time we're getting ready, to which I replied, you know who I am. And I started crying. And then she was Glinda. And then Eden Espinoza, who played Elphaba, came walking out and started talking to me. And I said to my friend Allie, we have to leave. And she said, why? And if you looked on my neck, I was breaking out into hives because I was so excited to meet Eden Espinoza because she was my favorite that like I couldn't even speak. And then she invited me to her birthday party and I lost it. And I was like, sure, yeah, I'd like to come. Like I was so awkward and so stupid and I had hives on my neck. And it was just I was just such an idiot, like such a loser. And then cut to like I go to her birthday party. Become friends with her. Cut to like a year later, we're at pilot auditions and Eden Espinoza comes walking out of a pilot audition and I was supposed to be next on the list to go in and I saw her come out and I was like, oh my gosh, hi. And the casting director was like, okay, Jonathan, you're next. And I was like, no, you have to put someone in between us. She's like, what? I was like, let that guy go.
They're like, why? I go, because whatever Eden Espinosa did in that room, I'm not going to come close to doing in that room. And I don't want to be the one that has to follow whatever Eden Espinosa just did. And they're like, are you serious? I'm like, yes. And so they put someone else in the room. And then I went after the next guy.
So, wait, I can vouch for how stupid you are when you meet musical theater people. So we went to go see Moulin Rouge on Broadway, and Aaron Tveit was the lead.
You can't talk. I'm starting to sweat right now. Look, just talking about Aaron Tveit on Broadway, I have sweat stains coming
so
from
I'm
my
gonna
shirt.
So I'm going to tell you the story. So what all the like 30-year-old women do when they meet Jonathan, that's what he did when he met Aaron Tveit. So Aaron comes out. We wait after the show, and like we're on stage waiting for him to come out, and like Max Clayton comes out, and the guys people from the cast, and we're like, hey, what's up? Just chilling, rapping, having a good time, right? Aaron comes out. Jonathan starts tugging on the bottom of his shirt like a toddler, and then like pulling it up and out in front of him, like just stretching his shirt out and like moving in this like weird, strange circle. And Aaron's like, hi, nice to meet you.
Oh God,
and
Jonathan's so just embarrassing.
It was so embarrassing. It was ridiculous. I've never seen my baby do this in his entire life. It was the funniest thing I have ever seen. And I was like, baby, you literally did what all the Mean Girls fans do to you. And it was hilarious.
Because he's my number one favorite. And he just left Moulin Rouge May 8th. But that's a whole nother story. I can't wait to see Derek Klina in it, because Derek Klina is also equally amazing, just different. Aaron Tveit's voice, I think, is a different tone, but I like both equally. However, that's not the point. The point is, what about the time I met Kayla Settle from The Greatest Showman at the Hollywood Bowl? Okay, picture it. So we go to see this Annie at the Hollywood Bowl. This is another final embarrassing story.
Jonathan took me to see Annie, which is a true testament of love, because like
Annie at the Hollywood Bowl.
What grown man
it was
wants
amazing.
To go watch Annie?
It's amazing. So we go there, and then I see Kayla Settle, who's from The Greatest Showman, the bearded lady. And she sings This Is Me, the song, which is my new favorite musical song. And I see her, and she's with some people I know. And I walk up to her, and I start shaking, and I just go.
Well, no, you had lapped for about 10 minutes.
Yeah,
and just taking laps around.
I was
her
taking laps.
You got
like, do I say something? Do I say something?
And then you
like
wait until the
if
most.
You're like, if you're like an actor and you're working in the industry and like people know you, you kind of have this like unspoken thing where you're like, oh, I can kind of walk up to anyone and be like, hey, and they're going to be like, oh, hey. And you kind of like know each other a little bit, but you don't. And it's like this thing. So we go.
You chose the most inopportune time to finally walk up to her.
Okay, so she's with a group of people I kind of know. And I walk up and I'm like, hey, guys, hey, what's going on? And really, it's just so I can like say hello to her. And
waits until she has finally started to put her hair up.
Okay, so she starts to put her hair up, like,
which
she's,
means
like,
she's
her
had
hair
to put her tickets
is in a ponytail,
in her
right?
Mouth.
She goes to put her hair up in a ponytail, and as she does it, I just put my hand out in her face and go, "Hi, I'm Jonathan," and I hold my hand out there. And as she does it, she has her ticket in her mouth because she's using both hands to put up her ponytail. And I have realized, oh my God, she's fixing her hair and it's going to take a second, but the ticket's in her mouth, so she can't really respond. And I'm just sitting there with my hand in her face. And so what do? I don't remove my hand.
Nope.
I just freeze and keep my hand in her face, just holding it out awkward, locked arm, straight arm out, just locked hand, waiting for her to finish. And she's just got these eyes looking at me like, who are you, crazy person? And I don't move, and I just hold it there. And finally, she gets done putting her hair up, takes her ticket out of her mouth, and she goes, "Hi, Kiel." And I'm like, "Hi, nice to meet you." And she's like, "Nice to meet you too." I'm like, "Can I get a picture?" She's like, "Sure." We take the photo, and I scurry off like a Mean Girls fan. I'm just so awkward around people that are in musicals, because I think they are the epitome of talent. Like, I get we do. In movie making, we do hard work, and we're on stage, and we're in movies, and we're on sets, and they're 12-hour days and 15-hour days, and it's exhausting. But at the end of the day, what we do is nowhere near what these people do 7-8 nights a week live. Like, it's just a different muscle, and it's so impressive to me. And with that being said, let's bring on our guest today, who is in the national tour of Hairspray with Jerry Mitchell. Thank you, the one and only Nina West.
We'll be right back with her.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is she breathing right now?
Yes, she's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy is a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody, it's a huge day on Pridecast because we are joined by one of my favorite queens of all time and by one of my favorite leads of a musical, of one of my favorite musicals of all time. This is why I woke up today. I don't know if it gets any better, but this is it right here. We are joined by the one and only Nina West, a.k.a. Andrew Levitt. Andrew, hey. Nina, fabulous. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like, there's so much I want to talk to you about because we're friends. We are good friends. We've hung out a bunch. And the more I hang out with you, the more in love with you I fall because you just are doing the work and you're doing the deal and you're the real deal. Thanks. And there's so many things I want to talk about. But first of all, you just got off of tour. You're on a hiatus, right? From Hairspray.
Yes, we're on a week break. It's a layoff before we jump back and finish our final 5 weeks of tour with the show before we take a full break and then go into our second year of touring.
Oh my gosh. So where did you just come from? What was your last stop?
Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Hellerb.
Hellerb.
It was fantastic. Have you guys ever been to Philly?
I've been to Philly once. I saw, like, isn't there a Liberty Bell there or something? No, that's
away.
Somewhere else. What?
Go away.
Is that not where it is?
No, that's where it is. So it's Independence Hall.
Yes, yeah, Independence Hall. There's a bell with a crack in it.
There's never been a more Jonathan Bennett comment in your life. The major historical location.
I wanted to take a selfie. It works.
You love things with a big crack.
Yes, I do. You know what? Know your audience. Hello. Hey, know who you are. So, okay. walk us through it. We talked about this after we saw you in Hairspray. Yeah. We went and saw you in Palm Springs, and it was so epic.
Wait, but where do we have? Where did we have this conversation at afterwards? Where did we go, you guys? Yeah. These three butch queens that we are.
We went to Yard House.
We
went to Yard House. There was hockey on the screens. I felt right at home. I was hanging with my bros.
Uh-huh. Just eating chicken wings with our hands, getting all dirty. Pretzels,
We had the tuna tartare.
We did have the tartare. James, you were trying to be good. I was like, fine, I'll eat it.
You're like, give me the pretzel.
I was very much like, is that a carb? I eat those.
Is butter a carb?
I eat those. So
you get the call from Jerry Mitchell to be in like the national tour of Hairspray, playing a role that, you know, Divine played.
Yeah.
Like, what goes through your head? Just walk us through what that call is like, and like, just tell the story, because it was so good.
Yeah, you know, I was on tour. I was in Indianapolis, and I was doing a tour post my season of Drag Race, season 11, which feels like forever ago now that we're in, like, we're going into season 15,
it's season 525,600.
I know. Mm-hmm. Another Broadway reference.
Thank you. I'll be here all day. Go on.
So I was on tour. I was in Indianapolis. And so it all kind of fits together with the fact that on my season for Snatch Game, I did Harvey Fierstein as one of my two characters. And Jerry Mitchell happened to be watching that season and happened to be watching Snatch Game and slid into my DMs and said, wow, Harvey would be so proud. Harvey would love this. And Harvey saw it, and Harvey, in fact, made some kind of really funny joke. And that's all I heard from Jerry. And then fast forward to August, and I was in Indianapolis on tour, and I get a phone call from a New York area code, and I thought it was my agent calling me about not booking a job.
You didn't get it. I know the feeling. Go on.
Guess what you didn't book? That. So,
but you can have a podcast. Thanks, guys. Cool.
That's my life. And so I answer the phone. It's Jerry Mitchell. And he says, Nina West, it's Broadway's Jerry Mitchell. As if I didn't know who it was anyway. I mean, like, he just had to say Jerry. He could have said Jerry, and I would have been like, it's Jerry Mitchell. And he says, it's Broadway's Jerry Mitchell. And I just want you to know, I had a dream last night about you. And I was like, okay, where is this conversation going? And he said, you know, I had a dream that you have to be Edna. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And he goes, he's like, I don't know what it means. More on it. I'll be in touch. And I don't hear from him for months.
What?
Months go by, August 2019. Then it full circle comes. I sent him an email in like October. I was like, hey, thanks for such a great phone call. It's in checking in, you know, to make sure everything was okay. Then I hear from him in December, and he goes, hey, okay, here's the deal. We're going to be reviving Hairspray on a national tour for its 20th anniversary, and we want you to be Edna. There's a couple things we have to have you do, but everybody's interested in you being Edna. And I was like, what?
I'm sorry.
So, I mean, wow. Yeah. So I mean, the initial phone call, when I got the call in August, when he says, I can't talk about it right now, I'll be in touch. I hung up the phone and I started crying, and I was like, is this how it happens?
Is this it? This is the thing they talk about?
Yeah, is this the way to the great Broadway? I didn't know how it worked. And so my initial reaction was like, just, I think I was just in shock. I was in pure shock that this Broadway legend is calling me about this iconic role. And the process was really quite simple. I flew to New York in January, and I met Jerry and Jack O'Brien, who is a very iconic, legendary theater director who's directed everything from The Full Monty to Shakespeare. He's a huge catalog of Shakespeare. He was the artistic director at the Globe in San Diego. I mean, he is just iconic, and he directed the original Company of Hairspray on Broadway. And I met them for dinner, and I remember going into the restaurant on Restaurant Row in New York City, and I walked into the restaurant, and there sat Jack and Jerry, and Jerry goes, come on, over here. And I went in, and I sat down in the booth, and Jack O'Brien looks at me and goes, all right, what else do I, he goes, okay, what are we having for dinner? And I was like, looked at Jerry, and I was kind of like, is that it? Is this it? Is this how it works? Is this it? And Jerry goes, we ordered And it turns out, I mean, like, so people who are listening don't think it was just given to me. I had to go in and I had to do a work session with, like, Mark Shaman and
no
Scott
big deal.
Whitman. I mean, like, no big deal. And Jerry and Jack and the entire creative team who put Hairspray on Broadway originally in 2002. And so I went in and I did a work session with them for about an hour. And I walked away and I was walking down the street. My phone rang. It was my agent this time. And my agent said, congratulations, you're going to be going on tour. And that's the story. And you asked the question, is it the biggest thing that I think I'm still trying to wrap my head around eight months later, after we've opened the show and toured around the country, is like, I've become friends with Harvey Fierstein, who is an idol of mine and who is someone who I really love and really respect, who originated the role on Broadway. In Philadelphia, not 5 days ago, we had original cast members of the original John Waters movie in attendance, who met us afterwards to talk about Divine, who they called Divi, they called Divine Divi. That was his nickname to them. And they're sharing stories and relating these really wonderfully powerful, trashy, fabulous John Waters isms to us as a company. And the whole thing still feels really very surreal. And I feel really grateful that I get to be the one who is walking in this right now. You know, like, it's pretty fantastic. And I always wanted this and I didn't see it. And I mean, I visualized it, right? I think we've talked about this, the power of like visualizing and speaking into existence the things that you want. Somehow this, I wanted this, but I didn't necessarily think this was on my path. And here we are.
I mean, I have chills, I have tears.
Tears, honey.
And it's just because I know, like, I get it. Like, you're from Ohio, I'm from Ohio. We were those theater queens in high school that, like I know what your Saturday nights were like. Your Saturday nights weren't out at the games. Your Saturday nights were, like, with you and your hags in your basement listening, putting on, you know, whatever, singing Rent and pretending to be Angel. And, like,
oh my God,
whatever, yeah. It was. Like,
or watching The Crow and having all these emo feelings. And then listening to Rhett and going,
they get me.
They understand. I mean, like, that was my weekend. You understood? Yeah, you get me.
Like, yes, that's what we did. And like Tony Award night, forget it. Like,
it was a big deal.
It was like everything. And so, like, to be that kid in school and then to just go on Drag Race and then have Jerry Mitchell call you and say that, like, I there's two things I don't understand in the world. I don't understand how airplanes fly. They tell me, but I don't get it. I understand, but I don't. And then this conversation right here, like, I understand what you're saying, but I don't get it. Like, I'll never get it because it's just so friggin' surreal and awesome. And I'm just, it's just so enthralling. And like, but then you get here, you have this phone call that happens where it's like, is this how it happens? You just get a call from a Broadway producer and next thing you know, you're Edna Turnblatt. Like, you get that phone call, but then you go to something like Drag Race season 11, which you were on, and you know, you originally like tried out for it like what, 9 times?
Yeah.
To be on Drag Race. Times. So it's just like such a yin and yang of how, you know, like how the business is and how the world works. So you auditioned 9 times to be on RuPaul's and finally made it season 11. What was it like going back every time for those auditions, you know?
Well, I mean, as we know this now, every season, the momentum just kept building. Mm-hmm. Everything felt more, it felt more important for me to keep auditioning because, you know, I was inquired about for season 1 and no one knew what this RuPaul project was. Ha ha, look at us now, you know? So they had inquired about me in season 1. And I was like, I can't. I was a national title. I had won a pageant, a national pageant.
You're like, sorry, I'm doing a pageant in
Muskogee. No, I didn't know. I mean, you didn't
I'm
know.
Sorry.
You didn't know.
I'm doing Who Hit Nelly with a Flounder in Wichita. It's opening night. Can't be there. Sorry.
Wichita. Oh, I've never been, but we're going.
on the national tour of Hairspray. For tickets, go to hairspray.com.
No, but like every season it became more important, I think. And I think, I mean, there's so many different things I want to say. Drag Race became and has become this thing with which people like me can really get exposure around the world for something that we do and something that we love so much that otherwise would often be relegated, I think, to bars and to nightclubs. And And that's where I cut my teeth. I've done work in bars and nightclubs for 17 years prior to my ever being on Drag Race. And so I think that the show is so powerful that it has, for me specifically, I can't speak for anyone else's experience, has changed my life drastically. You know, like, so I'm glad I auditioned all those 9 times. And I'm glad I got on when I did. I was on the last season before the pandemic. And so I got to travel the world like 2.5 times over before, and I'm in a 9-month period before COVID hit. And so, and season 12 and 13 haven't had that experience yet. And season 14 is getting that experience. You know, so it's like, everything happens for a reason. And if my time was when it was, and hopefully I'll get to go back and experience that magic again. But all I know is I'm eternally grateful. And I try to say this every time I talk about a new project or something. I wouldn't have happened without RuPaul, and it wouldn't have happened without the casting producers and directors. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have. Hairspray came from this, and the book came from this. And I mean, all these wonderful opportunities and things that I've done have come from this. And I know that. And I'm very grateful.
I love that about you, because you, I think we share the same quality there. And I think it's such an important quality, like it with Mean Girls. Like, I know my whole life is dedicated to Tina Fey and Lorne Michaels. Like, I owe them every single job I get, everything I do. It's because of them, and because them believing in me and taking a chance on me, that opened up every single door. So I get that. And what I think is so funny is, like, some people, as they get success and it grows, they want to shy away from, like, the thing that made them. And I just think it's so rude. I'm like, guys, you wouldn't be here without that. Like, that's why, like, whenever there's like a Mean Girls reference or people want to do something Mean Girls related, I always lean into it, because I'm like, of course, like, this makes so many people happy. And this is what started my career. Like, anytime someone wants me to say it, your hair looks sexy, pushback, or like ask me what day it is, like, I will tell them it's October 3rd, because just, you got to just pay the respect, like, got to pay the piper, you know? And I think you do that with RuPaul, always, like, you know, blowing up how great the show was and how much it did for you. And I think that's so important. And I think that's really respectful and a very good quality for someone to have in the business. So good job on that.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Well, and it's nuts too, I think, if you look at the universe. So, like, we went and saw you in Hairspray, and it is an absolute no brainer that you would be in that role, in that capacity. Like, you're so absolutely fantastic. I mean, the one number you guys do where you get the standing ovation in the middle of the show every time. I mean, come on. Like,
it's called Timeless. Okay. Just so you know, Dan, it's timeless to me.
I'm not a musical person, but I just remember that number and being like, well, damn, this is real good. But you look
like
you should have been
timeless
there.
Me with Nina West on Broadway, or the national tour, Broadway tour. And you're like, the song where they get the standing ovation, it's called Timeless, James. It is timeless to me. And it's one of the best songs ever written in the history of the world.
My point is that you should have been in this role. Like, you always should have been in this role. And it's just so crazy sometimes the road that the universe will take you on to get there. Because it's such a no-brainer. But had you not Harvey Fierstein during Snatch Game on Drag Race, which you auditioned for 9 times, you might have never been exactly where you were supposed to be. It's
everything
so nuts.
I really believe it, James. Everything does happen for a reason. Even when it feels like the world is ending, and I've been there. I mean, there was a time when I auditioned for Drag Race, and I think it was like season 8. And I don't know if I've ever shared the story. I think it was like season 8, and I was kind of being held on the line, and they're like, oh, don't worry, we're going to get back to you. And then it found out, like, all the girls were gone already, and they were a week filming. And I was like, why? So I was kind of like, well, why is that happening? Why are they kind of keeping me on the line? And then I did an audition for season 9. Like, I took 9 off from the auditioning. I was like, I'm not going to do this. And then everything just happens for a reason. Like, everything happens. I truly believe that. I truly, truly believe that.
So we could have had you on the Bob the Drag Queen season. Oh my God.
That was season 8. That was season 8.
That was season 8.
Yeah. And I'm glad I wasn't on that season.
Bob was like, hi, welcome to my show. Yeah, Bob, I'll be winning everything. Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I know Kitten with the Whip so well. I wasn't going to. That's her first drag day, by the way. Kitten with the Whip.
Oh. Fun facts here on Pridecast.
Yeah. Ow. Happy Pridecast.
All right, guys, I hate to interrupt you, but I think it's time for This Week in Gay History.
Oh, it sure is. But baby, I need the fancy introduction so I can do it. Please take it away.
Every week we like to celebrate something in gay history, because in order for us to move forward, we always have to remember where we came from. So James,
What happened this week in gay history?
I think it's important to do some stuff that's not so long ago to remind everybody that our rights and our privileges are very new and we have to continue fighting for them. So this week in gay history in the year 2015, Secretary of Defense Ash Carter announced that the military equal opportunity policy had finally been adjusted to include gay and lesbian military members. So just back in 2015, the equal opportunity policy did not include our LGBTQ plus family, but now it does. That is progress, and that is this week in gay history.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I want to talk about why you are so different than all the other queens. And I think it's so important because
shoulders.
It's not your shoulders. It's not.
I did watch a second episode of All Stars with the Vivian's red shoulder up, and I was like, I'm surprised I haven't like heard any references yet.
I know.
Like, caught out. I'm just surprised. I'm like waiting for it.
But when you have a book coming out in October called The You Kind of Kind, it's a children's book. And that I want to talk about the book, but I also want to talk about why you're able to do these books and why you're so special in the drag community. Because the drag community has so many colors to it. It's such an eclectic group of people. And the content that is shared is very eclectic. And what you do that's different than I'd say any other queen, I've never met another one like you, is that you're family friendly. And you, I never see you throwing shade at anyone, even if it is in a roast or in a, you know, the library is open type of situation. You handle your drag and approach your drag with a certain positivity and a certain almost childlike wonder for almost to inspire kids. And I think that is so important. Like, was this a conscious decision you made when you went on the show? Or 'cause I see you know, you're doing like the aquarium in Columbus. You're doing, you know, there's so many things you do that are kid based. And I noticed that in your drag, you don't cuss. You don't make sexual references that much. Like, it's a different type of drag. And I think it's so special and interesting.
I think that I make conscious choices and decisions based on the audience that is buying the ticket. So if I know that I am doing an 18 and over show, the content is going to be different than, say, a family event at a library, right? And right. I think that drag is under a very specific and kind of, I think, a very self-determining microscope by the viewer, and that says that, you know, queens are X, Y, or Z. And I have had a very long career that I have done very adult material. Mm-hmm. I use in a lot of my shows and have used adult language. I don't think I am Disney-fying drag. I think that right. I am providing content and entertainment based on the audience that is requesting it. And I think that I've been very decisive in how I do that. And I think that that's, you know, I think people hold me to it. There are some people within the LGBTQIA+ community who don't agree with what I'm doing. And they think that I am, again, like I said, using the term Disney-fying drag, trying to make drag clean and palatable for everyone. And actually, I think it's an interesting conversation in that we have, in the last 7 years where we have had marriage equality and kind of a watershed of rights given to us. And now we face we see these rights potentially and being pulled away from us. I know that I have queer friends who are coupled, who are not coupled, single parents, parents of LGBTQIA+ children who are identifying younger and younger, who are looking for and craving content that is a representative of their community that is not necessarily, it goes hand in hand with Blue's Clues, or it goes hand in hand with Drag Race in a sense, right? And so I'm trying to fill that gap and provide that kind of content that I also love consuming myself. You know, like I am a self-proclaimed Disney nerd. I love, you know what I mean? I love working with that company. I am proud to say that I have been working with the company on how to have conversations surrounding the issues that are important to LGBTQIA+ cast members and their fans. After the colossal failure of the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida, you know, I was able to have those conversations because I have also proven that I am willing to show up for this part of our community. I'm not turning my back on people who are parents or parents of queer kids who are, that to me, that is an important and vital aspect of growing up. My whole goal when starting drag was wanting to be representative of the things that I love and also provide voice and space for people who might not have it. And my career has shifted and changed and evolved, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm asking people to come with me. And of course, along the way, I'm going to lose some people, and on the way, I'm going to gain some people. But the process of growing and learning is, you know, trying to be my best self. Am I going to make mistakes? Of course I am. And I ask for grace and forgiveness in my missteps. But I also ask that in my journey, that people will see me for my intent and what I'm trying to do, which is trying to really provide space and voice for those who might not feel like they have it. And we're in such a dangerous time right now where people who are othered are very much under attack, from women to people of color to specifically our LGBTQIA+ community. That affects all of us so greatly. But if one is impacted, all of us are. And so we have a responsibility to really, I think, take a step back and go that this fight looks like and comes in many different shapes, sizes, and forms. And I'm part of that. And and a long history of my work within my specifically my Columbus community, and now post Drag Race, the global community, and having conversations that lead to equality and equity.
You're the definition of a leader. A simple yes would have done, but yeah. We'll go with the answer.
No, it is such a multifaceted prong, right? Because I do feel like the religious right hates me because I'm a man in a dress who is talking to kids. The amount of times that I've been on Breitbart, featured on Breitbart on their landing page, is insane. And what that does is it focus, it laser points a focus on me, that it makes it unsafe for me in specific situations when people know where I live. And that's proven that time and time again, people have shown up at my house, left things in my yard, and harassed me in that sense because of the work that I'm doing. So the far right hates me. And then people within my own community, specifically other drag entertainers, are like, she's a sellout. And it's like, well, actually, like, you have to look at the work that I have done and the work that I'm doing, and it all tells a story, and it all does really go hand in hand. And the work that I'm doing is only really truly serving and servicing my LGBTQIA+ community. And so, like, I'm like this really weird conundrum that's kind of walking in its own, in my own lane. And I think it's more punk than anything now. Drag is always a punk middle finger to the status quo. And I think that that's exactly what I'm doing by releasing a children's book that talks about the importance of kindness, by releasing a children's album that has songs celebrating our queer attributes to our community, like drag. And I think that it's trying to, I don't need to convince anybody. I believe that what I'm doing is right, but hopefully someday some of my LGBTQIA+ counterparts who also work in this same world of drag will see the importance of the work that I'm doing.
Listen, Andrew, there will always be critics. We know.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime you do anything, there will be critics. But remember, there's also somebody that maybe is still too shy to say it or doesn't say it for whatever reason, that had their life changed because of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So just remember that. Like, I mean, I'll face 100 critics all day long for that one DM of that person that says, oh my gosh, seeing you guys living your love loudly and authentically helped me find peace within myself, helped me find hope within myself. So go ahead, critics, do what you got to do to get it out of your system, because we're doing what we're doing to try to make change for somebody so their life has more hope and more meaning and they have inspiration.
Andrew, I think I identify with you so much in that space for the fact that, oh, by the way, Andrew's drinking iced coffee right now. This is the Iced Coffee Gay podcast. We welcome all iced coffees of any kind.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's literally my favorite thing in the world. So we welcome, yes. Can I just swirl it? Yes, it's the swirl for me. It's that sound.
That's gay applause. That's like a mating call.
Yeah, it's like a mating call. So I think that I identify with you so much in so many respects to what you were saying, because in a way what James and I do, and specifically what I do, is very similar in the acting world and kind of on social media with, you know, my target audience is like Food Network and Hallmark, and doing, you know, being the first gay couple to do a Hallmark movie and being the first, you know, gay storyline, first gay kiss, to go in and break the mold, which is what James and I have done, not only on social media, but just like, you know, we were the first gay couple on the cover of the Knot magazine, which is also always a hetero, you know, hetero magazine, if you will, since its birth. And to go in and break all these stereotypes and to just break the mold is what we've done. And so we get the hate as well. So we understand. But it's like, I always say this, I go, the people that already love RuPaul, they're already on our side, whether it be an LGBTQ+ person or an ally. If they're fans of RuPaul's Drag Race, we already got them. They're going to help us. They're going to support. They're going to stand up and fight for us. Mm-hmm. It's the people that aren't on the RuPaul side, that aren't RuPaul fans, that need that kind of, I don't want to say safer I don't want to say like a safer introduction, but they need something that helps their brain digest differently what it means to be LGBTQ+. And if we can help their brain digest it easier, easier. Why do I sing easier? Easier.
Easily.
That's how we change the hearts and minds, right? Like, if you're already a fan of RuPaul, then you're good to watch that. But like, what if, right. what if, you know, the aunt that's sitting in Texas or sitting somewhere that might not be very down with LGBTQ plus, but has a nephew that's gay, that she knows is gay, and all of a sudden she sees me and my husband in a Hallmark movie adopt a kid and start a family and see what the love looks like between two people, where all of a sudden she's just seeing two people fall in love and it just happens to be that it's two guys, but you're she's seeing the love between them and what a family looks like, and she goes, oh, okay, well, Billy's gay, if that's what gay looks like, then okay, maybe that's not so bad. You know what I mean? Like, what are those people that were changing the heart's mind? Because you can't just come at everyone with an, you know, a giant fly swatter being like, it's everything's gay and you can't just beat people over the head that don't respond that way. Some people, you have to respond differently.
Yeah.
To and each person. Ease them in.
And I have to ease them in.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ease them in. I think you're right, because
that was my drag name. Ease them in. Go on.
Ease them in. I think it's the whole point of, you know, like, as we go into Pride Month, it is really important that we all are craving for wanting to be seen and wanting to be heard for who we are and what we do and who we love. And I think that is intrinsic to, I think, the conversation here, which is, you know, I might be very different than, say, Bianca Del Rio, right? Who's incredibly successful. We are very different, but we are both working towards the same goal.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
And
there it is.
And that's really the bottom line. Like, mm-hmm. there's like, and it's kind of like when people, it's a different analogy. So I don't even know if it's going to make sense, but there's pie for everybody, right? Like, it's not like there's only finite pieces of pie. Actually, there's pie for everybody. And once we all kind of come to the fact that I need to make it easier for people to have access to the pie, not mm-hmm. to try to hold the whole pie for me. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Like, that's really where I think it also comes down to is like, oh, well, I see this pie in front of me. Why wouldn't I want to share it rather exactly. than say, because there's plenty of pie. We just have to make sure people have access to the 3.14.
Yeah. And, oh my God, I love them. So we're going into Pride Month. By the way, I'll vote for you for any office you ever run for, just so you know.
I don't know about that.
What you're saying is so important, because I think we have to remember, because we all get so caught up in the fight, right? We all get so caught up in it that when we see someone doing it differently than us, we can go, wait, but we're doing it this way. I think it's important to let everybody do activism the way they do the activism, because our goal is the same at the end of this. So if your activism is creating children's books and doing family-friendly drag, baby, do it, because there are right. hearts and minds that are going to be changed.
Right.
There are lives that are going to be changed because of that, because that is a lane that needs to be done while other people are doing the other lanes. And it's strength in numbers. Like, if we're right. all tackling different spaces, boom, next thing you know, we got an army.
That's right.
That's right, baby. It is officially Pride Month. You are on Pride Cast. What does pride mean to you, Andrew?
Over the years, I think it's all evolved. You know, like, when I was in college, I think having coming to this term of knowing who I was, I think, enough for me. Not even being able to speak it out loud, but knowing that I could acknowledge the fact that I was gay was, in its own way, pride to me. And then I grew up and I was reared and kind of cut my teeth in gay bars, and I was surrounded by LGBTQIA plus people who are very different than me, who lived so loudly, and it made me really try, I think, receive pride in a different way. And it meant a found family, it meant coming together, it meant having the ability to be who I was and feel whatever I was feeling in any given moment. And now, as an adult, having those different lived experiences, I think that pride to me means that it's not, you know, it's going to sound trite, but it's true that it's not just a weekend. It is not just a month-long celebration. Pride really is something, I think, as one of the pillars of our community, if not the pillar of our community, that allows us to have our own ability to express our identity, express our truth, and do that safely and equitably. And so for me, Pride is about, I think, reminding those of us who might have, who might be out or have the privilege of living an out life, to make sure that we provide access. And again, like I said, space for those who might not have the ability to do so on a day-to-day basis, so that they can at least feel comfortable, like, you know, like what I did initially when I was in college, just acknowledging the fact that whether or not I ever said it out loud, that I was gay or I was queer. So I think pride is like a lifelong journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take us, you know, it's a lifelong journey for an individual to feel and understand pride in so many different ways that it comes into our lives and the way we come into contact with it. You know, and so I think that I'm just on a different journey right now than I was when I was 18 years old. And I really love the fact that I can hopefully be a light for pride and hopefully allow people to feel their own power within themselves to be who they are.
It's ever changing. Pride is ever changing. And that's always something we hear all the time. And what a beautiful answer to what pride means to you here on PrideCast. Something else we do, because this is something we love doing, is sharing people that are doing amazing things.
We love to share.
Oh my God, I love it. Well. Only Nina West would pick up on that.
First person to do it.
First person, you win. That's what we're doing from now on. We love to share people that are doing amazing things for the LGBTQ plus community, and we should like to shine our big gay spotlight on someone that maybe the community doesn't know is doing awesome things. So, James, who is this week's big gay spotlight? Who are we shining it on?
Oh, this week we are shining my big gay spotlight on Xander Moritz. So we touched on this a little bit earlier. This stupid, hateful, dumb, don't say gay bill in Florida happened. And so Xander, president of his graduating class at Pineview School, was set to speak at his graduation. It's an Osprey, I think that's how you say it. And before he went to speak, he said his principal called him into his office and informed him that in his graduation speech, if he referenced any activism or him being gay, that they would cut his microphone and end his speech, halt the ceremony, if you will. So Xander, who is an outspoken advocate for our community, I always say the kids are going to save us, y'all. The kids are going to save us. So he did his speech. And because everyone knows him and knows who he is, he used as a euphemism for his gayness, his queerness, his curly hair. So he constantly referenced his curly hair, saying, "The first thing you probably think of when you think of me as a human being is my curly hair." And he just kept referring to it as his curly hair, which, by the way, has a beautiful head of curly hair. Curly hair people unite. But was referencing his curly hair throughout the speech. And at the end, of course, says the kids gave him a standing ovation, because the kids know what's right. The kids know what's good. It's just these silly, silly adults that haven't found the love in their hearts yet.
You call them silly. I call them assholes. But you know what? I guess we'll agree to disagree.
The people that weren't hugged enough, uh-huh, people weren't loved enough. But Xander found a way around it. Xander still inspired those who needed to hear it. And everyone who heard it stood up on their feet and applauded him. So, Xander, we are applauding you.
We're applauding you from PrideCast.
I take all of my big gay spotlight this week. It belongs to you.
Andrew, is there anyone you want to shine your big gay spotlight on this week? Do you have anyone that you... A friend, anyone, it can be anybody, maybe a friend, someone you've worked with, anyone that you just feel like needs a little spotlight on them.
Last Monday, I went to New York City to hang out and be a part of the GLSEN Respect Awards. And yep, they have a new executive director whose name is Melanie Willingham Jaggers, who is just such a light and so incredible. And I think that the work that they are doing for GLSEN is so important. GLSEN is an organization that helps students K through 12 find footing, and also allows for some advocacy work for students in those grades to be able to have space to be safe in schools and learn, just basically learn, or support GSAs across the country. And I think Melanie is so incredibly awesome and so wonderful. And I was in awe to be in their presence and to watch them, I think, in this environment, take hold of an organization and lead this organization so proudly and so fiercely. And so shout out to Melanie for all the exciting work that they're going to do with Glisten.
All right. If you don't know her, look her up. Get to know her. That's right. All right. Before we go, Andrew, we want to talk about your book. Your book's coming out. It's the You Kind of Kind. Tell us about what this book entails.
Yes. So over COVID, I worked on a couple projects. And the most exciting project that I got the opportunity and the privilege to work on was a children's book that's illustrated by my friend Hayden Evans, who's a brilliant, brilliant illustrator. You can follow him at Hayden Evans Art on Instagram. At Hayden Evans Art. At Hayden Evans Art. Did I say that clearly? I hope I did.
You got it.
But the book is about little Nina going out into the world and experiencing kindness in the world and how to learn how to give kindness. And it's really exciting. It is really beautiful and it's really fun. And it's already been given a solid review by Dolly Parton. So,
just a casual Dolly Parton nod.
So, friends, what are you waiting for? It's available for pre-order now. If you go to my website, ninawest.com, and it comes out October 25th.
All right. October 25th, The You Kind of Kind by Nina West, the Dolly Parton highly reviewed children's book. Go get it right now. Pre-order it. Like, what more do you want in the world?
People? Dolly Parton recommends.
Dolly Parton recommendation. Okay. No, five stars.
Yeah. She did. Listen, Moderna, pizza, Mexican pizza.
Yep.
The You Kind of Kind.
There it is.
Dolly's doing it all.
Mm-hmm, that's it. Like, oh my
check
gosh.
Check them off your list, friends. There they are.
Okay, you know, there's so many times in the community that we have to stand up and we have to fight, and there's so many times we talk about how hard it is to be a member of the LGBTQ plus community, but I'm proud, and those are all valid and very true and very real, but also there's the flip side to that that we like to highlight on Pridecast. So we have to ask you, what's your favorite part about being queer and in the LGBTQ plus community? What's the best part about it?
I love the people. Are you kidding me? I love who we are. I love that we are all so different. And I love the fact that we're all able to come together and have conversations and challenge one another and still hold each other and support each other. Literally, we are so different. We're all so different. And that's what makes, I think, this being queer and my lived queer experience so fantastic, is that it's, like I said, the journey of pride is always happening because this community is always growing and evolving. The people are the best part of being queer. I feel loved and I feel supported and I feel safe and seen every time I'm around another LGBTQIA plus person. And that's so important. It's the people.
Yeah,
we are kind of the best, aren't we?
I love us.
If you're listening to this and you're part of the community, I love you. I love all of us. We're so friggin' awesome and do so many cool things. And thank God we're gay. That's all I say to James every morning. I go, thank God we're gay, babe, because A, our relationship probably wouldn't work out if we weren't. But, you know, it's
that'd be weird.
It'd be weird. It'd be super weird. But I love being gay and I love us. And we love you, Nina West, for joining us on Pridecast. Thank you so much. And, you know, at the end of the show, I usually have my saying that I love to say, but this week, I want you to tell everyone your saying, and I'll give you a hint because it's my favorite. It's just your three little things you say, and they're on a t-shirt. So go ahead and let's wrap this up with the Nina West of it all and her advice to you. Nina?
Go big. Be kind, and most importantly, be you.
All right, there you go. Let's do it. Thank you so much. Happy Pride.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of your tour. If you haven't seen Nina in Hairspray, go check out the website now. And where do they go to check out the website?
Hairspraytour.com.
Hairspraytour.com. Do yourself a favor. Run, do not walk, to see Nina West as Edna Turnblatt in Hairspray, the national tour coming to a city near you. Thank you so much, Nina. Happy Pride.
I love you guys. Happy Pride. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Dad.
Bye.
Dad. I'll take it.
D. Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.